I'd like to thank you for inviting me on the show. It's such an honour to be here, and I'd just like to say that when I'm not playing Xbox with my mate Thor, I really like to listen to my favourite podcast, Pop Culture Pasta. Hey Dave, I'm thinking about doing another revolution. Do you want to join up? I might need some help with organising the pamphlets though.
Pop Culture Pasta.
I don't even know if I can go on with the show, because Cody, right before we hit record, drops this lame sixth grade joke.
That wasn't a sixth grade joke. That was a dad joke.
Yeah, but I'm a dad, and I don't tell jokes that bad.
Well,
I tell good jokes.
You would never make it as a TV dad.
It wasn't the hay is for horses joke, which is pretty bad. It was the... what was the joke? I forgot it already because it was so bad.
You were parched.
You said, oh. I'm parched. And then I said, hi, parched. I'm Cody. Mm. You're welcome.
And that was the end of the podcast. It was all over. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for supporting us, but we're done. Because no one will listen now. Look what you did. Are you proud of yourself?
Yes.
This is why we can't have nice things.
That voice you hear is... Sir Jackson, geek of the round table. Jackson, hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing? You're wearing your Royal Rumble shirt?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Did you enjoy WrestleMania?
Not as much as pretty much the entire internet seemed to.
Do you want to talk about it? What made you mad?
It's too deep.
Okay, it's too early, it's too soon. You're not ready.
Cody's been a part of those conversations, and he's got PTSD.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. It's too emotionally raw still. That was a wrestling joke.
Ayo.
Okay. This is Pop Culture Pastor. My name is Dave. Cody's here.
I am.
Cracking dad jokes, apparently. And, yeah, we've got a pop culture draft to get to. But first... Cody, I'm not sure there's anyone that I actually don't know who they are that I've talked about more than JoJo Siwa.
JoJo Siwa?
Is that how you say your name?
Sure.
Siwa? I literally have no idea who she is other than she was on that Dance Moms show. My kids watch that show. My girls especially watch that show. And every time they were watching, I would just leave the room. I can't handle it. That is like the worst of humanity. Dance Moms.
It is the part of humanity I try to block out.
Oh man, they're so poorly behaved. Not the kids, the parents. They're terrible.
Mm.
I couldn't watch it. But I know she was on that show, and is she a big deal? Like, is she popular?
Not really.
Okay. Cody knows her, but that's not an indicator of anything.
So. Explain that to me.
So I think that she is trying to keep the popularity she does have, which is very minimal, or she's trying to regain some of the popularity from the height of Dance Moms. But right now she is more of a quote-unquote influencer, but not really influencing much, but she has her cult following of people that are like, anyone that was on Dance Moms is a hero. So, he said with all seriousness.
We let that breathe. We gave you your moment.
So she's in like the news, apparently, because she did music when she was younger. She sang. And I use singing as a loose term here.
Yes, very loose.
And now she's singing again, and she's doing the thing where, like, she's a bad girl now. She arrived to some awards, painted up like she was the next member of KISS. And then in all the interviews she gave, she pretended like her going bad is like, she's like, I'm doing a totally new thing. No one has ever done this. And I'm just like, oh, are we living in a world where Miley Cyrus and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera do not exist? Or I thought they all did this.
And Michael Jackson was bad. Quite literally.
Hey-o!
Madonna reinvented herself like a million times. Yeah. And one of them was very dark.
Yeah, it was so weird to me because I'm looking at this interview, and I'm like, first of all, oh, that's JoJo Siwa. I talked about her, but I don't think I ever really saw her before. And then so I'm looking at her, and she looks every bit, even with the Kiss face paint on, she still looks like a goody two shoes. Like, she does not, you know, strike me as a Miley Cyrus, Christina Aguilera, ex-Tina, as they say. She didn't strike me as the type, but she was trying really, really hard.
Oh, yeah.
Really hard. And, like, the lyrics, they were playing her song, and I was like, oh, this song's junk. But it was like, I'm a bad girl. And I'm like, I don't know. Probably, but not the kind you're thinking.
Call yourself a bad girl. Are you a bad girl?
That's a good point.
Respond to us in the comments.
Anyways, so I started looking up news, and of course, there are lots of people going crazy about her current grasp at retaining or acquiring more fame.
Yeah, she had one quote that I was like, you did not say this out loud.
Yeah. Do you remember what it was? Was it the one where she was like, she's the first? She was trying to say, like, she's the first one who's ever done this.
Oh, the gay pop?
Oh, that too.
That, yeah. That wasn't the quote, though. So for me, the thing that she said out loud, and it got negative attention from the far left and the far right, and it was the weirdest thing, and, like, it disappeared. But she had said that she's addicted to porn, and she just encourages everyone to explore that.
No.
And I was like, whoa, lady. No.
What?
And then people, like, all over are like, oh, this kind of rewires your brain, that this gives you unreal standards. Like, why would you say this out loud?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow. She also, just for what it's worth, said she spent $50,000 on her teeth.
It seems right.
How so? Seems right. Like, that sounds about right, you know, monetarily. You're like a dental financial expert.
So,
or it seems right to spend $50,000 on your teeth, because that sounds crazy.
That is crazy. So for a while, she was like all about the candy, all about the gum, all about the sugary stuff. And that was her whole persona, was that she was super, super good and beyond goody two shoes. And, like, her whole world is just candy and life's great. And eventually you either get cavities or you got to get veneers. And so, yeah, no, that sounds right.
You know who else was all about candy? They sang a song about it. How they wanted it, and that was Bow Wow. 80s band extraordinaire.
Not Lil Bow Wow.
I was going to say.
Didn't know that was coming.
He didn't drop Lil.
I think that was their name. I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I think you're right.
Let about us know the in band. The comments if Dave is right.
Let us know in the comments every time Dave is wrong. So, Jackson, I'm glad you're here.
With Cody being the most youthful person here.
Shockingly.
To be an influencer, can I just wake up one day and say I am an influencer, or is there a requirement? Are you two influencers?
Not yet. I do think you have to have a certain mass following. I don't think it has to be gigantic numbers, but somewhere in probably the tens of thousands.
Oh, I was going to say I have like 90 Facebook friends, so... Am I influencing?
You're so close.
Yes.
I think you're really close here.
I worry sometimes Facebook's going to think I'm one of those bot accounts. I probably need to just start adding people in mass.
That Fallout show starts today as we're recording this. Are you guys interested in that at all?
Elaborate.
The Fallout show. It's on Amazon Prime.
There's Cody's answer, by the way.
It's based on the video game, told.
Okay.
Which I would normally not be interested in, but I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, this looks interesting. But to be fair, I am a sucker for post-apocalyptic drama.
So, yes, Fallout, the video game, great. And
is it? Okay, I've never played.
The story looks good. Like, if they stay somewhat true to the video game, I'm down.
EW.com says it's an addictive post-apocalyptic adventure.
It got a high score from IGN. I will say that I'm interested, but I've got so many other things that I would never got around to watching that it may be 3 years from now. I got it confused with that Borderlands movie, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So is that similar? Is Borderlands like a post-nuclear world video game?
I have not played Borderlands, so yeah. That's on you, Jackson.
we're like the non-pop culture pastors when it comes to video games.
So I'm really into like the sports video games, and then like the ultra nerdy like Skyrim.
How's that ultra nerdy?
You have to be a big nerd to play it. Like, oh, okay. No one and their mom just sits down and is like, I'm going to invest like 400 hours of my life into this at least.
Okay, so was that a compliment or did you just insult every listener who plays Skyrim?
I'm with you.
I killed my spider 5 minutes in and then turned it off. So
I was just kind of scanning for news here, and it's like I think it's light news this week. Although Prince apparently gave Nicole Richie a dog once named God. The dog's name was God. She said she told Jimmy Fallon, I did not name the dog. That's what Prince named it. And I guess if Prince gives you a dog, you don't change the name if he already named it.
I'm going to assume it's a lowercase g.
Yes, yeah.
Glad you put once, because I'm like, wait, that is a much bigger story. Prince is giving people dogs.
Prince is alive, I tell you. He's not.
He that and is, Tupac on the same island.
Also, I mean, if we're getting into, you know, sort of our kind of wheelhouse for news, James Gunn gave everyone a look at the Superman logo, and it's atrocious.
How dare you?
How dare I what? You can't even tell it's an S, bro.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
No. You're just being a honk. You're just being a James Gunn apologist.
The logo's been out.
No, it's worse. So he modeled it after Superman's logo in the Kingdom Come series, but he made it even more stylized, and you literally cannot tell it's an S. You guys are both looking it up now. See, you haven't even seen it.
I'm pretty sure I have seen it, and if it is what I think it is.
It looks terrible. It looks like an S if you're, you know, not English.
If you haven't drawn an S.
If you don't speak English, not British. That didn't make any sense. But you know what I mean.
IGN, I'm just saying, what is James Gunn doing? Pop-ups.
What are comic book movie makers doing?
Oh, no. This is the logo that was, like, leaked out forever ago.
Well, I think it looks terrible.
No, it looks good.
No, it doesn't. Tell me why it looks good.
Because it's the Superman logo.
No, it is not.
The logo looks slightly different in each iteration, just like with the Batman logo. If you can tell,
that this
then
is not
you can tell.
This is not slightly different.
This is
a lot different.
It is slightly different.
Mm-hmm. So is it hashtag not my Superman, Dave?
Dave has so been far, looking for something to gripe about once they announced Superman was coming the DC universe.
I mean, like, look, I'm starting to get a little worried that James Gunn will only make superhero movies that are ensemble casts. Like, you're making a Superman movie, and yet there's this weird team of heroes that are going to be in this movie. I feel like you're skipping five steps, which is like the DC MO.
No. No.
What do you mean, no?
Because if it is...
You know that's true. What I said was...
No, he wasn't even a part of it, so... What we do have is a track record of James Gunn movies, superhero movies.
Ensemble movies.
We have Brightburn also. Not
that
ensemble.
Is not a superhero movie.
It's a supervillain movie. Okay, my bad.
That is like an Elseworlds serial killer story.
Also see within Marvel and some of the DC movies that people that you're like, oh, that's a familiar face. Oh, that name. They did nothing with it. It's just there as kind of an Easter egg or something set up for a future movie. So they might be in it, but they might have zero to do with the movie. So
they're giving themselves options.
So Cody, if you're playing along at home, Cody is putting all his eggs in the, well, maybe they're not really in it that much. So you're admitting it's probably a mistake.
No, I'm good if they're in it. But I also trust James Gunn. Without him, you don't have the Infinity Saga, in which Feige has said he came up with the bulk of the storyboarding for it.
I'll agree with Cody. If I'm going to get in there for that movie, it's purely for James Gunn. So
yeah.
All right. You're not worried at all.
No. It can't get worse.
And you...
That's
it
true.
Cannot get worse. I wish
we should zoom in Scotty right now just to tell him that. Scotty is a Sir Scotty, geek of the round table, is a big fan of Batman versus Superman, which like, is basically a crime against humanity.
Or he legitimately enjoys it.
No, he legitimately enjoys it. Now, Scotty enjoys most things. He's one of those guys.
He's one of those people.
Yeah. Those people? What do you mean by those people?
That can never say nothing bad about anything.
Yeah. I mean, he enjoys most things. But he is a big fan of Batman versus Superman, which, honestly, I just don't
understand that. The director's cut.
I don't walk out of movies, but that had me considering it.
I hated that movie with a white hot passion.
I may have said things to the screen at the Martha part.
The Martha scene is so comedy gold right there.
It frustrates me to no end with how the internet handles the Martha scene, just because, like, working in mental health, like, it's weird what snaps people out of a, like, anger-filled void that, like, literally, you can say chocolate ice cream. What? Like...
No, that makes way more sense than the Martha scene. Chocolate ice cream would bust me out of a lot of states.
Both moms were named Martha. It made sense.
We got to watch our statements. We might activate sleeper agents. So,
all right, that's enough for
it.
The,
still stinks, by the way, news Cody. Segment. Rationalizations aside,
so just to review, dog's named God. JoJo Siwa is apparently bad now. And James Gunn Superman is going to be terrible.
Terribly awesome.
Yeah, that sums it up. All right, we got a pop culture draft coming up. Don't go anywhere. Pastor, we are here for a pop culture draft. We were supposed to have four, but Leah could not join us.
She was too busy saving lives.
No, really. Yeah. You're serious. She was saving lives.
Yeah, she works in the medical field.
Yeah. I wish I could say that. I was too busy today putting songs into a computer for the radio. It doesn't have the same ring to it.
It does not.
Anyways, welcome. We're here for a pop culture draft. We thought with the eclipse and all the doomsday prophecies that come with these sorts of things.
Earthquakes.
There was an earthquake. I don't think it had anything to do with the eclipse, though.
It's all connected, Dave. It's all connected.
Statue of Liberty got struck by lightning.
Yeah, as a church person, if I had to see one more person share on social media this stupid thing about the totality path is going across five towns named Nineveh, I was just going to scream. Like, why are you looking at me? Like, did you share that post?
I didn't know that post was a thing.
Oh, you didn't?
I must not be following the right people.
Oh, there were several Christian influencers who were trying to pass off this very long-winded explanation for why this eclipse was somehow a sign of God's judgment on the United States. But it's always like, you know, with this bent of like, God is going to judge the United States and make America great again. You know, it's always got that kind of spin on it. Which, you know, I'm not trying to be political because I really don't care.
Yeah, I won't step in it.
Good for you.
I just laughed at Nineveh because it struck me as a funny word.
Not much of a Bible reader?
Well, I mean, Nineveh isn't like something that even Bible readers talk about that much.
Well, okay, so right, like my as a history guy, when I heard that, like, oh, there's a Nineveh, Texas, but why? Why would you have named your town after the capital of the Assyrian Empire? That just seems weird.
There's a Paradise, Kansas.
Okay, but that sounds like you.
It sounds
nice. If I'm
nice.
Starting a town, I would name it Paradise. That makes sense to me.
But it's in Kansas.
Dude.
Can you slander the state you live in?
Wow.
Burn.
I mean, how are you just going to sit here and slander your home?
The geographical center of something, Cody.
There's something where the geographical center.
I don't know if it's
center
Kansas
of.
Or the world. I should read that mural sometime, but I'm not going to.
Anyways, Cody's Kansas slander aside, we thought, what a more perfect time that we could talk about the disaster movie, because Hollywood has long been a fan of the disaster movie. And I don't know. I'm excited about this because I'm kind of a fan. I'm a fan of disaster / post-apocalyptic stories. I just dig that, as I said, that I'm kind of looking forward to the Fallout TV show because I'm a fan of those kind of stories. And I don't even know why. Do you think there's a reason why?
There is probably something that we could get deep into to why you are the way you are.
We do have a therapist on the show.
Cody's like, why are you the way that you are? So, yeah. First, before we really get into it, I thought I would ask you, what is your qualifications to make a disaster movie? Like, what is a disaster movie to you, Jackson?
That's a question I had never asked myself till this episode. I went with wholesale destruction, like on a grand scale. I was curious about Marvel movies because they were more products of what was going on. It wasn't like an act of God or things of that nature, but definitely wholesale destruction, mass loss of life.
I think the people who lived through the blip would tell you it was a disaster.
Absolutely.
I'm not advocating for Marvel movies to be included in this, as I wasn't going to, but.
And I think just anything that's like unavoidable.
Okay.
Inevitable, maybe. I'm sure I've got some ones that are all based on accidents, but that's okay.
Cody, in your strange head, what makes a disaster movie in for you? Do you have it written down? Like, is it in your notes?
No, it's not.
Oh, I thought you were going to read me a definition. No. I was like, man, you came prepared.
That would be too professional of me, Dave.
Did no prep for this.
So for me, it is like usually there's going to be an act of God, weather, something like that. Mm-hmm. Or if it's like in the science fiction genre, then like something catastrophic happens, and there are extreme moments of peril, and not everyone's going to survive.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably somewhere in between both of you. Like, I feel like it can be humans doing to themselves. It can be an act of God, I think, as well. I'll be all over both of those categories probably with my movies. So, I think a disaster is anything that changes the context of humans living in it for the foreseeable future, right? I think that's kind of what enters my mind, your foundations of society in this, wherever this disaster happens, breaks down.
Better well said than mine.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Now that we got that out of the way, now we're going to go kind of, this is more, there's no right or wrong answer here. When you were thinking about your list and what we're about to draft, what makes a good disaster movie, Jackson? In the mind of Jackson Chauncey, what makes a good
place
disaster
you don't
movie?
Want to be? For me, it's... honestly, it's the characters. That's, I mean, I can forgive special effects because obviously, from 5, 10 years, you know, it's going to be completely different. But I want to care about who I'm following, and I want to be impacted by their success or their ultimate failure. So if I don't care about anybody that I'm watching, then the special effects can be top notch and it's just CGI. You know, I'm just watching scenes. I'm not feeling anything. I'm not connected to anything. So I need that tissue of I want to root for the hero, or I want to be hurt when, you know, the dog dies or whoever.
Oh, man. I think we just got a preview of something on Jackson's list.
All Maybe. Dogs go to heaven.
No. Marley and Me. Clearly it is disaster. A
disaster movie.
So, Cody, in your mind, what makes a good disaster movie?
I mean, it has to have a good story. I have to be able to see this as fathomable or believe it, that it could happen in the universe or world that it takes place in. Mm. Also, if it makes money, that tells me that it's good.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Okay. That was, I didn't realize we were going to sell out right here in the podcast, camera. But, what a sellout. I can't believe that answer. Yeah, for me, it's a little bit of all that. You know, like Jackson said, I really am interested in like the interconnection, the relationships between humans. It doesn't escape me that in these society breaks down, post-apocalyptic disaster type movies, it's usually the humans that end up being the worst of the worst. Zombie movies are a great example. The Walking Dead refers to not the zombies themselves, but the ones who still live. And in that show, the most dangerous elements of it are other humans, not the zombies themselves.
That Whoa. Show was annoying with how little zombies there actually were.
But it's, I mean, you got to admit the concept of zombies is interesting. Because it's sort of, I always say this a lot, mostly to sound smart. That didn't get a laugh, but I was hoping it would get a laugh. But zombies, the zombie story is an allegory for how humans consume each other.
Deep.
That we do this all the time. That's kind of what we make our lives about. We consume other humans in ways, and we want to, you know, whether it be in the workplace. Or, you know, how we're consumed, the not to get too communist on you, but the proletariat and the bourgeoisie and, you know.
Is Thank Dave you. A communist? Let us know in the comments.
Let us know in the comments.
Didn't realize Karl Marx Jr. was in on the spot.
Okay, I'll just say it. Communism is a good idea. It just, in theory, it's just not feasible. Because humans can't run that system.
It never works.
Yeah, but that's the secret to all our forms of government. Well, you
got capitalist Cody over there. Yeah. If it's good, it makes money.
If it makes money, it's good. I'm a fan. Yeah, so there's that part of it for me, the relationship part in disaster movies. There's also, this is weird, because I do like a gloomy, dark disaster movie at times. I just said I like post-apocalyptic, so there's a gloominess to that, but not too gloomy. The Road, based Ooh. On Cormac McCarthy's novel, is like that was a slog. And that's on a lot of people's lists of best disaster slash post-apocalyptic movies. And I watched it and I was just like, ugh, this is a slog. Like, I feel like there's no redeeming quality about it. It's just depressing. So. But that's just personal. It's a personal thing. So, like, I am a little partial to, like, the fun disaster movies.
Zombieland.
That would be a fun one. But there's others that I'm sure we'll talk about tonight that I would say there are real stakes. There are real there's real mayhem and chaos going on. But they're also kind of fun. And that usually involves that, like, you know, at some point, at the end, the good guys are victorious, even though there's large loss of life in the movie. In the end, good triumphs over evil. And if you have comedic moments of levity, too, that goes a long way with me.
Oh, you're going to be crying with my list.
Not all of my list will line up with that. I'm kind of all over the place, but yeah. So, right. Okay. That's where we're at.
Sweet.
I'm just trying to tell you what was going through my mind. So if we're ready, I will spin to determine the order of this pop culture draft. Ready? I don't know what just happened.
Why are there three Dave wedges?
I don't know. I need to spin. Here we go. Spin. It is spinning. The number one pick. Jackson Chauncey.
There we go.
Jackson will go first.
I think this is the first draft we've ever done where I'm not number one.
Followed by...
Dave.
You're absolutely right, sir. Followed by me. Cody will bring up the rear. He's in trouble because he only came with five movies.
It's time to assault
that
list.
What were you thinking?
Because I have others in my head, but...
Cody has high scruples with his choices.
I do.
High hopes. Okay.
They're all A24 films.
So, yes. Jackson, you will lead off the draft. What is the first pick in the disaster movie draft? What are you taking number one?
Well, I'm doing this as a security to make sure that I can have it. So I'm going to go with the Pierce Brosnan volcano film Dante's Peak.
I mean, I think it was safe.
Nope.
No.
No. No, you were going to pick that too?
That was in the short list that was not written down.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so go ahead. Do you want me to... what we normally do here is I will give the synopsis and just kind of the basic information, and then you can go.
Perfect.
All right, go you ready for this? Dante's Peak. 28% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That sounds about right.
No, that's ridiculous.
Here is the synopsis. Volcanologist. That's not a real word, is it?
Volcanologist
Harry Dalton, played by Pierce Brosnan, and Mayor Rachel Wando, played by Linda Hamilton. I forgot she was in this. Finally convinced the unbelieving populace that the big one is about to hit and that they need to evacuate immediately, only to discover her two children have got up the mountain to get their grandmother. With Earth's clock racing against them, they must rescue the kids and grandma before the volcano explodes in a fury of flame and ash a million times more powerful than an atomic bomb. Came out in 1997, directed by Roger Donaldson. Was cost $116 million to make. And it doesn't tell me how much it made, which makes me a little nervous for it. But clearly it was the better of the two volcano movies that came out at that time.
We might have to talk about that later.
Are you a volcano drama fan?
I'm somewhere in the middle. I play in both sandboxes.
Okay.
Maybe a...
Tell me about Dante's Peak. Why is it your number one pick?
I'm a Pierce Brosnan fan, so that's probably what puts it over the top.
I mean, who isn't?
It's also a movie that has some pretty memorable scenes, notably Grandma.
Grandma, who plays Grandma here? Is it someone we know?
I don't think it's anybody we know, but Grandma gets in a volcanic lake and...
Is her name Ruth?
Yeah, she doesn't come out very well, and you get to see some rotted legs and...
Oh!
That's where the $116 million went.
Yeah, some lost sleep. But it was a movie that we saw as a family, and, you know, I've said it before, but my parents were divorced when I was born, so we had the separate households, but we came together, we were at the theater, you know, it's a good time. It's got the appropriate amount of stakes. It's serious, but not too serious. You know, you've got a lot of your tropes, you know, the teenagers getting boiled in the lake after sneaking off to skinny dip.
It happens all the time.
You've got animals in peril. You've got, fried squirrels. You've got the... Really,
a delicacy, to be sure.
Absolutely. And the beginning is pretty impactful because you're following Harry and he's, I think it's his wife or his girlfriend, and they're evacuating somewhere internationally, and a lava rock comes through the hood of the truck and caves her head in. And
no.
I mean, it's
spoilers.
For a very, very old movie.
He just puts himself in all the dangerous spots.
You get to see his elbow, the bone shoot out through the skin. I've never seen that before. So there's some scenes in that that'll stay with you.
You know what's crazy is I know I've seen this movie, but I don't remember that. So apparently it didn't stay with me.
You were too traumatized.
Maybe.
Blocked it out.
It's not streaming for free anywhere. I found that out in my pursuit last night. So,
okay. So did you guys, side question, did you guys prepare for this by watching one you hadn't seen in a while last night? Because I did.
I did not.
I got halfway through one I hadn't seen in a while, and I did watch, and it's not on my list, so I may be spoiling it for somebody else, but I did watch Deep Impact, because that was another one that I had had some fond feelings for. So
the more serious of the asteroid movies that came out at the same time.
Yeah.
How dare you?
That one and Armageddon. Armageddon's clearly more fun. And the better watch. But we can get to that later if it's on someone's list. But you almost watched Deep Impact.
Partially watched.
No, I watched Deep Impact. Partially watched one that I think might come up later.
So. Okay. All right. Cool. Why is it? So this movie's a 28% on Rotten Tomatoes. Clearly was not a favorite for critics. And I suspect it'll come up again as in these conversations because the disaster movies are big in this way. Mm-hmm. How can something be critically and, you know, I mean, objectively, we can look at it and say this is not a very good movie, but yet there's something about the disaster movie when experienced with friends and family or group that makes it fun and we just have fond memories of it. How does that happen?
I think it's what you're looking for. You know, I'm not worried about scientific accuracy. I'm not worried. I know Cody mentioned like the fathomability of it. I'm not really worried about that. I'm like, just get me on board. Give me a storyline. Tell me where we're headed and I'll take that ride.
That's a good way to put it. It's kind of like a ride.
Yeah.
Because I found that when I was compiling my list, I'm like, man, these aren't very good movies. Like, they're not, they didn't win Oscars.
The story is usually secondary, I find, that they focus a lot on the graphics and or the names in it, and then the story overall is not like a huge deal. It's the event that it's taking place around.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do like the idea that there's something bigger, something inevitable that we can't avoid, and like putting ourselves in that predicament, even though in all likelihood in the middle of Kansas, most likely I'm not going to have to deal with a volcano.
The good thing about living in Kansas is when we see these movies, there is one exception to this that will come up later in this episode. But most of the disaster movies, you feel like I'm in not bad shape just by being a citizen of Kansas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
After the Kansas slander, I will say it's not bad.
Kansas. You literally have a shirt that says Kansas. It's not that bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you have more to say about Dante's Peak?
Just that, you know, it's a good time. You've got the escalation, you've got, you know, the denial and everything like that. And, you know, it's a good time. It's well worth it.
All right. All right. Jackson selects Dante's Peak. It's my turn with the my first pick in the disaster movie draft. And I'm going to set this up a little bit. Disaster movies are a thing for quite a while. I mean, in the 70s into the 80s. There's like the Towering Inferno. There's all the airport movies, which were always some disaster striking from the context of the view of people at an airport. There's the Poseidon adventure. Earthquake was another famous movie, I think, in maybe the early 70s. And all of these get terrible ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. They were not well critically received. And I don't even know if they were even big movies for their time. Although the Towering Inferno might have, just because there was a ton of people in it, which they were kind of on to something with that. Like, if you have a lot of recognizable faces, maybe that's kind of a key here. Because for me, in 1996, somebody came and flipped the genre on its ear. Two people, actually. And I'm speaking of the Emmerich brothers when they made a movie called Independence Day in 1996. And this is one of those movies that it's not going to win any awards. 68% on Rotten Tomatoes. If you're not familiar, in the epic adventure film Independence Day, strange phenomena surface around the globe. The skies ignite, terror races through the world's major cities. As these extraordinary events unfold, it becomes increasingly clear that a force of incredible magnitude has arrived. Its mission, total annihilation over the 4th of July weekend. The last hope to stop the destruction is an unlikely group of people united by fate and unimaginable circumstances. Roland Emmerich, director, made $817 million at the box office. So this qualifies under your rules, Cody, as a movie that you got to recognize. Mostly, it had all the points of what I tried to mention earlier. First and foremost, it's a fun movie.
It has the Quaid.
Randy Quaid, before he goes like completely nuts. America's
favorite Quaid.
That's the truth. Dennis getting all the headlines, but we all know we love Randy more. Maybe their parents, too. I don't know. I can't prove that. But, you know.
I think Jack Quaid's actually my favorite.
Jack, yeah. This was a vaulting point for Will Smith. This was the big movie that kind of catapulted him into the stratosphere as a bankable star and an action star. Up to this point, he was the Fresh Prince.
Wilford Smith.
But not recognized as much is this is also the movie that makes Jeff Goldblum Jeff Goldblum.
The Bloom.
What?
Yeah, dude. Jeff Goldblum.
The Fly had been out for 100 years at this point. Okay,
listen. The Fly was a weird kind of thriller suspense movie.
Body
horror movie.
Being the Bloom.
The Fly was good, but it wasn't like it was a dominating force in the culture, right? People respected it.
That's a Gina Davis movie, Cody.
He met his girlfriend, Gina Davis, at the time, making The Fly. And it was good, if not a little disturbing. But Jeff Goldblum, as we know him and love him now, was pretty much created in this movie. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're going to be wrong, but you'll hear that later.
I know where Cody's going with that.
Where are you going?
You won't know until later. So just keep going.
Must go faster.
Yeah, keep going.
This movie comes out before that, doesn't it?
Keep going.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, yeah, anyways, I think Independence Day is great. It's got humor. It's got levity. It's got the good guys winning at the end, thanks to the aforementioned Randy Quaid. And, of course, one of the best presidential speeches ever from President Thomas Whitmore, played by Bill Pullman.
Not Bill Paxton.
This is our Independence Day. And that's the movie I'm going with. That's my number one pick.
It is a movie.
I love rewatching this movie.
No, it's a solid choice. The sequel's one of the worst things ever created by humans, but
yeah, never saw it.
Oh, burn.
Never saw it. Now I was like,
shots fired.
To me, completely unnecessary. Why would you do that?
Because aliens will come back, Dave.
Yeah, sure they will. Not in some of them. I know one set that ain't coming back. Might talk about them later. Okay, Cody, your number one pick in the disaster movie draft.
Okay, so you know what's scary, Dave?
Salads?
Tropical storms, Dave. They're scary.
Tropical storms? Okay.
Like cyclones.
All right.
And hurricanes.
Same thing.
Yes.
Just different parts of the world.
And I don't know what it is in this particular part of the world. Also, what else is scary is starting a new business.
Mm-hmm.
It's risky waters right there.
Frightening.
And the scariest thing of all is you're on an island with Newman. Yes, we're going to 1993's Jurassic Park.
Okay. Okay. So is the disaster in this referring to the hurricane?
It was a perfect storm of events, Dave. Of hurricane. Sabotage by someone that works for your business. And then all the dinosaurs get out and start eating people.
You know
Death what? Death occurs everywhere.
You know what? I'm going to allow it. I think this qualifies.
And it's a disaster for the rest of the world because the pterodactyls are not contained to the island.
Yeah. There is an answer for that in the book. Of course, we're talking about
Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park.
Yeah. So Jurassic Park, that's a good selection. I'm upset that I didn't think of that one because I didn't think about it as a disaster movie.
That's the only way to think about it. Poor Sam Neill.
Let's see. Jurassic Park does come out the year before Independence Day. They're close, though. So, like, you could really say that it was a bang-bang thing for the Goldblum.
I feel this is where I get my full Goldblum-ness.
Goldblumiest.
Yes. Jurassic Park, 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I choose winners.
I could be wrong, but I think that's the only one of the franchise that would qualify other than maybe World.
Well, I mean, to be fair, a lot of them are disasters.
Ayo!
Well, I feel like with Lost World, they go...
No, yeah. Lost World... No.
I mean, I guess if you're coming from the standpoint of dinosaurs invading the real world would be
disastrous,
I guess. But we're never really shown that.
No.
In those movies. We're never really shown what the effect of dinosaurs wreaking havoc on ecosystems, you know, would do.
Thanks a lot, Jeff Goldblum.
Because dinosaurs in cities.
But that would require you to be a much smarter script writer than apparently what they're dealing with. Here's the blurb. In Steven Spielberg's massive blockbuster, paleontologist Alan Grant, played by Sam Neill, and Ellie Sattler, played by Laura Dern, and mathematician Ian Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldblum, are among a select group chosen to tour an island theme park populated by dinosaurs created from prehistoric DNA. While the park's mastermind, billionaire John Hammond, played by the incomparable Richard Attenborough, assures everyone that the facility is safe, they find out otherwise when various ferocious predators break free and go on the hunt. This made a billy, $1.058 billion, only a budget of $63 million. How about that?
That's shocking because of all the stuff they had to do to make the dinosaurs come to life.
Yeah.
Still holds up.
It does.
Oh, man. Incredibly. Incredibly. Side question. Name a better 1-2 punch for back-to-back movies than Independence Day and Jurassic Park by Goldblum.
That's tough. I'd have to really stop and think about that.
I mean, there's a span of a year there where Jeff Goldblum is the biggest star in the world. Jeff, the Flies, Jeff Goldblum. Exactly. Previously unthinkable.
But you look at the list of people in this movie. You already mentioned a few, but B.D. Wong, Wayne Knight, and Samuel L. Jackson.
Hold on to your butts. Yep. That's my favorite line from that whole movie. In fact, I quoted it like in the last 48 hours.
And he was dealing with computer viruses on top of a tropical storm that was wiping out the park's infrastructure.
This movie was ahead of its time.
It was a movie that young Jack left as soon as the raptor kills the guy in the first 5 minutes.
This hits you young, huh?
Yeah. Somebody had to go play with toys in their room because whatever the adults were watching was a little too intense.
So this movie, just as a side note, holds a special place in my heart. Story time. My grandmother and I used to go out on dates. When I was a teenager, we would go to dinner and a movie. And my grandmother, as I've said many times, was just the sweetest person in the entire world. She was British, which made her somehow sweeter. Although if I called her British and she was here, she'd be like, excuse me, I'm American, thank you. Which she was. She was a citizen. She married my grandfather. But like she had an accent. So I find it necessary to tell people. And we go to see this movie. Theater's packed, right? Because this was a popular movie. And We're in the middle of the theater, like right in the middle. And when the Tyrannosaurus busts through to save them at the end, very iconic scene. She stands up in the middle of the theater. She's like, oh, I have a Charlie horse. I have a Charlie horse. And I'm just like slinking down in my chair as she's standing up yelling in front of everyone in this iconic moment. And so, yeah, this movie will always remind me of that.
Great moment to have that moment.
Yeah, right?
convenient, but great.
Yeah, so I will say that a lot of people don't make it out of this movie alive.
That's true. The lawyer buys it first.
Yes. We nearly lose the Goldblum. We do lose Samuel. Which was tragic.
Sadness.
You lose Muldoon.
Although they didn't lose, they didn't lose his arm.
They found that. But no, this movie has some stakes. It has a good story. It was groundbreaking at the time for its animation graphics. And it has the DNA molecule that talks. And that is...
no DNA.
That is like... iconic to me, and it has so many iconic scenes and terrific cast, and it made bank.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed that I didn't think of it, because this is an iconic movie, and that's going to grab some votes.
So what does it mean to you, though? You've told me, like, why.
So I will tell you, I loved this movie as a kid. Unlike Jackson, I tuned in, wore out the VHS tape. I had the Jurassic Park bed sheets. I had the Jurassic Park curtains. I had the Jurassic Park sleeping bag. I had the dinosaurs that you could play with.
Do you see what he's doing? He's dropping his street cred right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you had me at Jackson, Jurassic Park sheets.
Yes. Oh,
and there wasn't dislike from me. There was a, this is a little too intense for 5-year-old me.
Nope. This is the correct thing to show 5-year-old Cody.
Made him who he is today.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Jackson, your second pick in the disaster movie draft.
All right. With my second pick, I'm going to go to something that's a little more based with Kansas, and I'm going to take Twister.
Oh, no!
One of my movies is gone.
Not one of mine.
I thought about letting somebody else have it, but it was a movie that I watched probably the amount of times Cody watched Jurassic Park. I didn't have Twister bed sheets or Twister figurines, but that was a movie that, you know, obviously we live in Tornado Alley. As a child, I was fascinated with tornadoes. I went to Universal Studios and I guess you could say experienced the ride. You don't really ride that ride. I would say it's one that I go back to. I feel it's really the best way that tornadoes have been represented in film. Bill Paxton, Helen Hunt, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Carrie Elwes.
Ton of people in this movie.
He won't be in the sequel, but... You know, it's a movie that, yeah, you probably lose realism, but it's a action-packed. You've got escalation. You have characters that you get attached to. Maybe you don't lose any of them like you should, but, you know, that's grasping at straws here. But, you know, it's a good time. You've got iconic scenes, the cow that gets picked up. You know, that
you're probably loses some in realism statement is hilarious. Probably,
yeah,
the cow flying by is great,
but it's something that it stood the test of time. It's a movie that my kids would have seen, and I've seen, and my parents have seen, and you know, it's stuck around, and you know, we've had a fair amount of disaster movies of all shapes and sizes, and it's the one everybody goes back to. I'm maybe in the minority that thinks the sequel will do just fine.
It will.
If it focuses on why this movie hits, absolutely. It will. And I'll get to that. Let me read the synopsis. 63% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I just disagree with.
We're moving on up.
During the approach of the most powerful storm in decades, university professor Dr. Joe Harding, played by Helen Hunt, and an underfunded team of students prepare the prototype for Dorothy, a groundbreaking tornado data gathering device conceived by her estranged husband, Bill, played by the late Bill Paxton. When Harding tells Bill that Dorothy's ready for testing and their privately funded rival, Dr. Jonas Miller, played wonderfully by Cary Elwes, he's a great villain, has stolen the idea and built his own, Bill rejoins the team for one last mission. This movie cost anywhere from $88 to $92 million, it says. Made $495 million. This movie, Jackson, if I recall right, how old were you when this came out?
I think it's 96. I'm not looking 96. At anything, so...
So, yeah, I'm...
Eight.
I'm 20 when this movie comes out. And if I recall this right, this movie hits big at the theater kind of as an event, because they had made a leap forward in sound right around this time. This was right around the time of the Dolby kind of explosion, where you got like the cool thing at the beginning of the movie, the, you know, and the surround sound craze. And if I remember right, the sound of this movie was so stinking cool.
Well, and I went to an Alamo Draft House a couple years back that played it, and it was interactive. They had flames. They They would throw cows across the theater.
Not real ones. No animals were injured.
You know, they had a themed menu, because if you can, when they go to Aunt Meg's, if you aren't hungry by the end of that scene, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. True. True. This movie's amazing. This movie's so much fun. The realism struggles, though. But for the most part, it's just it joins in the fun. Like when the cow flies by and you hear it moo.
Moo.
Literally in the middle of a tornado, and the cow flies by and you hear it moo.
Well, very end, when they're inside of a F5 and their skin's not ripped off.
Yeah, they're like holding on with, you know, like they've tied a belt around. Yeah, sorry.
Cody has to endorse it because it made money. So I think we've got a unified thumbs up.
So that's a great pick, and it steals one of my picks. But
way to go.
Twister's great. I love some Twister. It's my turn.
It is your turn.
I almost forgot there. I'm so used to going last. I feel like I go last all the time. For my second pick.
Oh, please don't take mine.
This one changed last night. Last night I changed. This movie climbed up my boards. So I realized I hadn't seen this movie since I saw it in the theater. And I'm gathering my kids. I'm like, hey kids, you want to watch a disaster movie with Tom Cruise? And they're like, sure. And so my two daughters especially wanted to watch. My oldest daughter's 16. My youngest daughter's 11. Now she's usually pretty sensitive to movies. So I explained to her what this movie's about. It's an alien invasion.
Oh, so we're not doing Vanilla Sky?
No, although that is a disaster in its own right. But it's an alien invasion, and it's tense. This movie, it's not about jump scares. It's directed by Steven Spielberg, so Jurassic Park continuation here. But he masterfully builds the dread. And then once it gets to the crescendo, it stays there for a long time in kind of their running to trying to get to their destination. And so the dread is just ratcheted up through the whole thing. I'm speaking, of course, of 2005's War of the Worlds, based on the H.G. Wells classic tale. Here's the synopsis. 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. Dock worker Ray Ferrier, played by Tom Cruise, struggles to build a positive relationship with his two children, Rachel, played by Dakota Fanning, which I had forgotten, and Robbie, played by Justin Chatwin, when his ex-wife, Marianne, played by Miranda Otto, drops them off at Ferrier's house. It seems as though it will be just another tension-filled weekend. Been there. However, when electromagnetic pulses of lightning strike the area, the strange event turns out to be the beginning of an alien invasion, and Ferrier must now protect his children as they seek refuge. Directed, as I said, by Steven Spielberg, cost $132 million to make, and made, if I can scroll down here.
$5.
603 or 803? 603 million.
I was close.
So, yeah, that's clearly a lot of money.
Price is Right rules.
What struck me on this viewing, and again, I hadn't seen this since I saw it in the theater almost 20 years ago, is the focus on relationships. Tom Cruise is wonderful in this movie, playing someone he doesn't usually play, which is kind of he's the hero sort of by the end, but through most of the movie, you don't like him. He's a very bad dad.
I'm not going to lie. Through most of the movie, because I watched it a couple months ago, or rewatched it, I'm like, these kids are annoying. You deserve better.
So there's the other side. There's the alternative view. I did not feel that way, although the son in particular.
Oh, yes.
The son is wildly disrespectful.
The people's elbow at times.
Morgan Freeman, of course, is the narrator, which just rocks. Amy Ryan from The Office also appears as his neighbor in this movie.
Are we going to say Tim Robbins?
Yes, I was getting there.
Okay.
Tim Robbins with, I mean, he's like the guy that comes in off the bench and scores the game-winning touchdown. Oh, my goodness. He plays the crazy guy that they take refuge with. And is just it's the dramatic linchpin for Tom Cruise's character. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in the movie where you actually feel compassion for what he's having to do. And Tim Robbins plays, I mean, if the dread was ratcheting up the entire movie, it gets to its zenith at that point and is so masterfully done in that the drama is not the aliens anymore. You're feeling most put off and most in danger by this kind of understated, mentally, at this point, mentally ill man. And it's just, wow. And I just forgot how good this movie was. The end note to this is my 11-year-old daughter clearly could not handle this. As she was fine through the movie, I told her several times, when she was like, I told her several times, like, okay, we can pause this. You can go to bed now. Like, but she's like, I'm okay. And then as soon as we went to bed, she was in our bedroom. Can I sleep on the floor? And then half an hour after I fell asleep, I got woken up to her in my wife's face going, can I sleep next to you? And then she basically was awake most of the night, keeping us awake. Do you think aliens will attack? No. Especially not these. And the people win at the end. There's crazy deus ex machina at the end of this movie, which I kind of appreciated.
End of the movie put it in my B tier. But
yeah, Morgan Freeman does this great monologue at the end, and he talks about God and how God populated this planet with all these microorganisms that humans had earned their place with a billion deaths, their place on the Earth, and that the aliens hadn't. And that's... You know, spoilers, but it's great. I forgot how good this movie was.
I thought it was okay a couple months ago rewatching it.
It's but due for a rewatch with me.
But. You'll be like, oh, Cody was right about the son for sure.
Well, the son, but
the daughter,
American treasure, Dakota Fanning.
Daughter could have been a little bit more with it in this disaster.
Yeah, I think watching it with my daughters her character in particular, so when Tom Cruise is finally coming around to like, okay, he's not such a bad dad, but when they're making their way through this chaos and he's holding her and trying to take her to the car and saying, don't look, keep your eyes closed, because he doesn't want her, obviously if you're in a situation where there's just death all around you, that would be seared into your brain. So he's thinking about those sort of things. And it's like, this kind of wonderful moment, even in the middle of all this just existential dread.
I will say the introduction of the aliens in that movie is S tier, God tier, whatever the kids are saying these days.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And I saw that in theaters, may have been with Cody.
Nope, it was not.
All right, well.
You're welcome.
Should have been there, but yeah. That is the height for that movie for sure.
Okay.
Especially if you have a sound system.
Cody, your number two disaster movie pick.
You remember how I told you that storms, especially out at sea, are bad?
No, I don't remember that, but I'm
well, yeah. Jurassic Park.
I agree. Yeah.
Storms out at sea. What if I tell you three storms converging into one area? That's scary.
It sounds perfect.
What if I tell you that the storm is so strong that even Mark, I would have stopped 9/11, Wahlberg doesn't survive it.
Impossible.
And it's based on a true story. I am talking about The Perfect Storm.
This is one of those that's, I mean, actually a great film.
So I will reveal something after you read the synopsis.
Okay.
It's going to shock you.
The Perfect Storm came out in 2000. Doesn't seem that old to me, but I guess it is. Only a 46% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
I can tell you where that comes from.
Based on a true story, as Cody said, the film tells of the courageous men and women who risk their lives every working day, pitting their fishing boats and rescue vehicles against the capricious forces of nature. Their worst fears are realized at sea on Halloween of 1991, when they are confronted by three raging weather fronts, which unexpectedly collide to produce the greatest, fiercest storm in modern history, The Perfect Storm. Directed by Wolfgang Petersen, will cost $120 million to $140 million to make, which is expensive for the time, but made $328 million. This was a big hit.
It made some money. So I will tell you, the first time I watched this movie, I actually got emotional. And I don't get emotional.
Shut up. Shut up.
I don't know if it was because it was like based on a real story and like all these guys that you kind of grow to like as the movie's progressing and you're rooting for them to live. These are real people and they actually died. And it's heartbreaking because at one moment in the movie, they get to somewhere that's kind of calm and they're like, oh, we made it out of the storm. No, you just made it in the eye of the storm. And it is brutal from there on out. Diane Lane, John Hawkes, who goes on to be in Deadwood. Phenomenal show, by the way. George Clooney, Mark, I would have stopped 9/11, Wahlberg.
That is his middle name.
It is. John C. Reilly is in it.
William Fichtner.
Michael Ironside. Christopher McDonald. Just all the names are in this. And again, true story and loss of life because everyone that's on the boat doesn't make it.
Spoiler alert. For a 25-year-old movie.
Yeah. Came out in 2000. So if you hadn't watched it by now, I'm sorry.
That was on a lot of people's lists of when, if you just Google best disaster movies, a lot of people had that one on there.
I had it on mine because, like, whenever I think natural disasters, it either is 1A or 1B, with Twister being the other one. Mm-hmm. And so Perfect Storm is...
As long as you mute Diane Lane, perfectly fine movie.
Wow.
That Boston accent.
Wow. Shocking Diane Lane
is
slander.
Is that why it got 46%? Yes.
And this is coming from a Diane Lane fan, but that accent's brutal.
Is it like New England?
Bobby.
Yeah. It's not good, huh?
No.
It's been a while since I've seen that one, too.
Well, bring the Kleenexes.
Rest of the movie, perfectly fine.
Okay.
And I will make a bold proclamation. Mark Wahlberg's best movie.
I mean, I guess we're just ignoring The Happening.
Yep.
Okay, Jackson, your number three pick.
All right. You know what? I'm going to go with...
This feels like it's taking a lot of emotional energy.
Well, I have a lot of solid choices here.
Oh,
but,
okay.
I'm going to go with the Sylvester Stallone vehicle, Daylight.
Wow. Okay. Under the radar.
Yeah, leaving some things on the list.
Okay, tell me about Daylight.
I thought you were going to tell me about
it. Okay, all right. Sure, let me bring it up. 1996 film, obviously starring Sylvester Stallone. 26% on Rotten Tomatoes, my friend. A group of armed robbers fleeing the police head for the New Jersey Tunnel and run right into trucks transporting toxic waste. Wouldn't you know it?
Mm-hmm.
The spectacular explosion that follows results in both ends of the tunnel collapsing, and the handful of people who survived the explosion are now in peril. Kit Latoura is the only man with the skill and knowledge to lead the band of survivors out of the tunnel before the structure collapses. Came out 1996, directed by Rob Cohen. Made $159 million at the box office, so it wasn't a bomb.
I applaud it.
Tell me about Daylight.
Cody with the endorsement. So Sylvester Stallone for me has always been Rocky. He has other movies, but that's what I go to. Those are my comfort zone. And I remember thinking, you know, he had a run in the mid to late 90s that I have no concept of. So I came across Daylight, and honestly, Kit Latoura is what put me on the radar of, like, that's a wonderful and god-awful name all at the same time. And I gave it a shot, and when I was talking earlier about characters you care about, dogs in peril, that's this movie. You've got a disgraced, I think he was FEMA or one of those emergency management organizations. He's driving a cab, and then all of a sudden he falls right into a big catastrophe. You've got Viggo Mortensen as the pretentious mountain climber who tries to save the day and dies 5 minutes into the movie.
Viggo, what? What a waste of talent.
No, he gets quite the buildup and then meets his end pretty quick, but... it may come up later, but drowning is a big thing for me. Like, obviously, I don't want to be a part of any kind of disaster, but there are so many ways I'd rather go than drowning. And you're in a enclosed area, claustrophobic, and you've got water streaming in. You know, these guys.
This sounds like the perfect storm.
It is the perfect storm of my fears, yes.
It's pretty much the same movie, you guys.
Well, I was looking at IMDb right before I came in here, and one of the commenters that rated it called it the Poseidon adventure. And it's very true. There are some scenes that were pretty much lifted from that movie, but you've got your emotion. You've got, you know, you have a large amount of characters that start out and they get weeded out throughout the movie, so that you do feel that sense of loss. You are connected to some of these characters that go. It gets a little unrealistic. So, you know, Sylvester's got dolphin lungs, but, you know, it's a good time and a high recommend for one of those kind of off the radar, off the beaten path type movies.
It's interesting, too, that Sylvester Stallone, you would have thought more disaster movies would have been in his wheelhouse. But he doesn't really make a lot of those. He's got more of the straight up hero kind of path.
Yep.
So this was under the radar. This is a good pick. I like
it. It's a random pick.
If you're gonna bank on something, especially with these third picks, bank on a star.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm gonna do.
Sleeper Uh-oh. Off the bench.
Who are you banking on?
Because I had a hard time picking this third one. There's literally, I'm looking at six movies right now that I could have picked any one of them and been happy with. And I've decided that I'm going to go with this one, even though I don't think it's the most beloved. But I'm going to go with it because Will Smith has such a great turn in this movie.
Wild, Wild West.
It's basically, no, it's basically the Castaway of apocalypse movies, disaster movies. I'm speaking of I Am Legend.
I thought you were going After Earth for a minute, and I...
I Am Legend.
Which is a remake.
Yeah, well, right. It's based on a book, But I can't remember what the original name of the movie was. Is it Night of
the Last Man on Earth?
Last Man on Earth. Is the book Night of the Comet or something like that? I don't know. There's lots of iterations of this. But Robert Neville, played by Will Smith, a brilliant scientist, is a survivor of a man-made plague that transforms humans into bloodthirsty mutants. In the book, they're vampires, by the way. He wanders alone through New York City, calling out for other possible survivors, and works on finding a cure for the plague using his own immune blood. Neville knows he is badly outnumbered and the odds are against him, and all the while, the infected wait for him to make a mistake that will deliver Neville into their hands. 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, came out in 2007, cost around $150 million to make. Let me find it on Wikipedia here.
I will tell you, Vincent Price is in the original.
Yes, it made $585 million, so another big win for the studios. This movie is like the Castaway of disaster movies. So the same way Castaway with Tom Hanks, he spends a lot of time on screen just by himself, and at one point is talking to a volleyball. Will Smith does great in this movie on screen by himself with a dog for most of it, and talks to mannequins. You can tell he's kind of cracking up in a wonderful scene. He kind of talks with mannequins. This has one of the most, like Jackson, this has one of the most heartbreaking animal death scenes.
I was going to say it if you didn't.
Of all time. And when he's like, having to put down his own dog and singing, every little thing's going to be all right. I mean, cry fest. Now, the interesting thing about this movie, though, why it's not higher, is because the first half of this movie, the first two thirds of the movie are great. The end of this movie is atrocious. It's so badly ended that there was an alternate ending that when DVDs are first hitting, there's all these extra scenes and stuff that come out and alternate endings. The alternate ending is actually a more beloved ending. So in the original movie, he dies. He blows up himself with the monsters, but not all of them. So they're still out there. It's just like a bleak ending. In the alternate ending, he gets out.
I don't like that.
Yeah. And so, okay.
Cody's apparently anti-Will Smith.
look, he's wrong because they're actually developing and making a sequel now based on the alternate ending.
I know. And I told you I hate this retconning junk. Release it the way it should have been released the first time or deal with it.
We can't have me on an episode without retconning coming up.
Oh, boy. I just think story-wise, I didn't like the way it ended. I don't know that they handle the monsters. I just call them the monsters because it's really kind of unclear what these people have turned into.
Zombies.
In the movie, yeah, they're zombies, but they're kind of an amalgam of a lot of different things. But Will Smith's performance in this is just so, so, so good that it vaults it, it catapults it for me. Even with an ending I don't like. And so I Am Legend is my third pick.
Oh, you all are silly gooses.
Cody's going to tell us why.
Are we baiting you with his into third our pick trap
in the disaster movie draft?
Okay, so I have to go with my friend JC.
Jesus?
A film that he directed with Kate, I Will Let Go of Your Cold Dead Hand After You Have Died, Winslet. Yes, we're going with a movie loosely based on a real life story that takes place in the water, Titanic.
Okay, so I was wondering if this movie would come up.
I was wondering if it qualified. There were discussions pregame.
It qualifies.
I think it qualifies because of the scale. So for the context of being on that boat, in the same way that Daylight is the context of the people stuck in this tunnel, but it really only affects this group of people, right? Or like if you're on a bridge that collapses, it's a disaster. But as far as disasters go,
it's a pretty contained disaster.
Yes. So I think the Titanic incident qualifies as a disaster.
Especially when you don't have enough lifeboats.
Especially when you lose Leo.
Yes.
I mean, Titanic.
I hope you have two VHS tapes ready to go, buddy. Yeah.
This one, that's something I will always remember. This is at the tail end of VHS, the beginning of DVD. And if you wanted to watch it on VHS, you had to have two tapes.
And if you're like me, you just watch tape two.
I'm not going to lie. This movie infamously made me cry as I was coming out of the theater. Just the weight of all the lives lost. And the emotion of it, I cried at the end of this movie.
Young Jackson viciously cried to Titanic, not for the love story, but similar to what you said, the tremendous loss of life. I remember being in a hotel room with my mom and sister and just crying hysterically when the third class passengers, I think she's putting their kids in bed. And I believe that's the character from Aliens.
Yeah, Jimmy Cameron does
cognizant
well.
Cognizant of nothing, but yeah, just brutal, brutal film.
He does that scene well, the band playing as they're going down. Oh my goodness. All the emotions. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. James Cameron's Titanic is an epic, action-packed romance set against the ill-fated maiden voyage of the RMS Titanic, the pride and joy of the White Star Line, and at the time, the largest moving object ever built. She was the most luxurious liner of her era, the Ship of Dreams, which ultimately carried over 1,500 people to their death in the ice-cold waters of the North Atlantic in the early hours of April 15th, 1912. Cost $200 million to make, which was a lot. Made, this is insane, $2.2 billion. This movie was a phenomenon.
And a wonderful Celine Dion song.
Yes. I mean,
I don't know if her chest has recovered
from her punching herself while singing it.
Oh, so this cast, Kate Winslet, Leo DiCaprio, the Billy Zane.
Is this the best Billy Zane appearance of all time?
It's got to be, right?
He's so wonderfully, deliciously evil.
Tombstones out there, but
it is up there. Kathy Bates, Bill Paxton, Victor Garber. Yes, this is a star-studded cast. And, of course, James Cameron, who all he does is make blockbusters. Again, 3 hours and 15 minutes of movie time. He was not about making a short film. He was thinking about making a quality film.
Like, I don't care how good it is. That's a slog.
Just watch tape two, kids.
But no, the storytelling's brilliant because you start off in the present, go back to the past, end up back at the present. Still not sure why she drops the necklace at the end, but oh well.
There was room on that door.
There was room on that door. Although James Cameron claims he brought in experts to test out if there could be room or not. And
he made that up.
I feel he did too. But no, and it's based on a true story, loosely, that at least the ship going down. It's real.
Sure. Yeah.
And so we get that, and it was a disaster. If you
caused a disaster, too.
Yes.
I mean,
I'm wondering when we get that movie, by the way.
simply, one of the most culturally significant movies, because this comes out. I mean, the internet's a thing, but it's not like it is now. And this is one of the most memed. Lots of memes that still play big from this movie. It's been 89 years or however many. Yeah. And of course the Celine Dion song at the end of all sporting events, they play that song. I mean, it's an instant meme. Yeah. This movie, that's a legit, certainly the most successful of all the movies we've talked about.
Yeah. Somehow it doubled Jurassic Park.
Yeah, which, you know, this is why it's on Cody's list, because he's Mr. Capitalism.
Yep.
All right, so our two bonus rounds, we're going to go through these a little bit faster. Just you'll state your movie. You'll give us a short 30-second case for why it's your pick. The first bonus award goes to the Mayhem Award, the best special effects for maximum damage of disaster movies. Jackson, tell us.
2012.
Dang it, I quit. I'm out.
Yeah!
No!
Yeah!
No! This that was going to be my pick!
This movie, I feel, is underrated and wasn't as bad as people thought.
Oh, it's terrible.
You can... It was what it needed to be. If you cut out about the last 45 minutes, you have a quality-ish film. I don't need the lifeboat scene, but neither here nor there. You've got destruction on a grand scale. You are introduced to characters that you're given just enough time to care about. Again, fits the bill, destruction on a grand scale.
I don't know if I would call it a good movie. But it is definitely, like, as far as catastrophic damage, I mean, you've got Yellowstone erupting, you've got the poles switching, you've got a great flood, which this movie is just bonkers. And it could have been renamed John Cusack Outruns the Apocalypse. That could have been the name of this movie. But basically, when you find out that this movie is just a Noah's Ark film, it's... updated Noah's Ark. I'm like, what is happening? It's a crazy movie.
But when I say underrated, I'm like, maybe adjust that Rotten Tomatoes 5%. I'm not lying to myself here, kids, but
it is a crazy flick.
And you have some quality Oliver Platt in that too.
It was going to be my pick because the damage done in this movie is quite extensive. So I'll go to my backup.
Don't you dare.
My movie for maximum mayhem is The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, you can have that.
Go for it. 45% on Rotten Tomatoes, came out in 2004. Another Emmerich film, I believe 2012, also an Emmerich
with
film.
The lesser Quaid.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're slandering the Quaids.
Dennis Quaid. Yeah, like, I mean, we can say Randy's the man, but... Dennis ain't bad. Dennis Quaid's in this, Jake Gyllenhaal, and we do get to see New York absolutely devastated. There's the iconic image that was on all the posters of the giant wave taking out the high-rise buildings of New York, which, you know, I remember people making kind of a, like, people were a little uneasy with this because this was so soon after 9/11, just a couple of years. And so some people were a little uneasy with it being New York, but I get it. I dig it. It's great. Great film.
Okay.
It's not a great film, but there's lots of mayhem. It's my pick for mayhem. Cody, who is your pick for mass mayhem disaster movie?
So I'm going with a fourth movie in a series of five movies.
Oh, wow.
But it gets better as it goes along until the fourth one. The fourth one's where it peaks and the fifth one's trash. Sharknado, The Fourth Awakens.
Oh, okay. So I have no idea about this one at all. Tell me about the mayhem. Sharknado 4?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's Sharknados all around the United States, all around the world. Ein Zering's having to jump into these tornadoes with chainsaws and chainsaw up.
Guys, sharks. Pray for Ein Zering, please.
David Hasselhoff and Gary Busey have to team up, and Hoff gets sent to space to stop the Sharknados that are going into space. Nowhere safe, Dave. Nowhere, but constantly people are having sharks flown into them and getting devoured by the sharks. Oh, blood is everywhere.
This movie literally is called Sharknado The Fourth Awakens.
Yes.
14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It is so campy. It is beautiful. Oh, I love it.
Listen to this cast. I mean, you've already mentioned a bunch of them. This is amazing. Tara Reid, Ein Zering, Gary Busey, David Hasselhoff, Wayne Newton, David Faustino. Remember him?
Yeah.
From Married with Children. Gina Lee Nolan. Oh, man. Vince Neil. the lead singer of Motley Crue, Carrot Top, is in this movie. Paul Schaefer.
Al Roker is in this as a weather person. Oh. He plays himself.
Wow. Wow. Sharknado 4. For the mayhem. You're doing it for the mayhem. Jackson, the last bonus category is for dread. Scariest disaster movie. What is your selection? I know no one's stealing my pick for this one. I know this one.
If you're the one I'm concerned about most.
Yeah, there's no way we're picking the same movie.
If we do, I might rampage.
Okay. Like Jackson may disappoint us both.
I'm all about disappointing. happened to leave a lot on here, but I made this mistake and it was as bad as advertised. My choice is Contagion.
Oh.
Watched it during COVID. Had never seen it up to that point.
Absolutely. Oh, that was a rookie mistake.
The wrong idea. You know, I saw somebody suggest it, and I'm like, I'm sure it's like Outbreak, you know. As long as I stay away from the tiny little monkey, we'll be okay.
Ugh.
Horrifying film to watch.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it was like the thick of COVID. It wasn't, you know, coming in when we didn't know anything or coming out when we were all past it. It was right in that thick of, you know, seeing the death tolls on YouTube every day and wondering if you were going to have to, you know, steal from your neighbor to be able to eat and all that.
I made the mistake of watching this movie when it came out. There is not many movies, the style, genre of movies that I just can't do. And Outbreak was another one.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was kind of silly, the monkey, all that. Man, that movie freaked me out. And this movie freaked me out back in 2011.
I don't know that I'll ever go back to it.
You watched a Matt Damon film?
Matt Damon.
yeah. Contagion. Wow. It's tough. Tough. I don't know that I'll ever go back and watch those. You know, like I don't.
It's just a hard watch. It's not a feel good film by any stretch of the imagination. When Cody said Kate Winslet, that's where I thought he was going.
Nope.
Yeah. I feel the same way about Outbreak. I've watched Outbreak and Contagion one time apiece, and I don't know that I'll ever revisit them. That is truly scary stuff. And it's because it could happen. Like, you know, this isn't a zombie apocalypse, although, you know, much. Even though your high school kids will say that that's a thing that can happen, it can't. Zombie apocalypse isn't real.
The mortality rate, because, and we're not making this the COVID cast, but, you know, that had such a reduced one. And then, you know, this was something on a much grander scale where a lot of those precautions we didn't feel we needed to take led to mass death.
Yeah.
And Jude Law profiteering.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why Jude's my favorite.
Also pretty scary. Pretty scary. So my pick for the dread, I don't know what it was about the 80s that
thank goodness.
Yeah, I'm not taking your I told you I wasn't taking your pick. But we did these made for TV movies that were designed to scare the crud out of kids. I remember there was a made for TV movie called Adam. It was based on a true story about a kid that got taken. From a kidnapped and murdered from a store. And it's Adam Walsh, son of John Walsh.
America's Most Wanted.
Who went on to host America's Most Wanted. So it was a true story. And I remember my mom making me sit and watch that. Like, I think all parents in the 80s did that. They made their kids watch it and say, this is what happens when you run away from me at the mall. You know, because things were different. And then, like, you know, a couple years later, they were like, oh, here's a key for you to walk home from school because I won't be home from work for a few hours. And they're mm-hmm. like, what? I thought it was dangerous for me to be
Adam
alone.
Walsh.
So yeah. What movie are we
I'm at? Getting there. Let me set it up, man. I'm a storyteller. This movie was a made-for-TV movie. Came out in 1983. Scared the heck out of everybody. It's the middle of the Cold War. I'm talking about a movie called The Day After. 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. Here's the synopsis if you want to hear it. In the mid-80s, the U.S. is poised on the brink of nuclear war. This shadow looms over the residents of a small town in Kansas as they continue their daily lives. Dr. Russell Oakes, played by Jason Robards, maintains his busy schedule at the hospital. Denise Dahlberg prepares for the upcoming wedding. And Stephen Klein, played by Steve the Goot Gutenberg, is deep in his graduate studies. When the unthinkable happens and the bombs come down, the town's residents are thrust into the horrors of nuclear winter. Made for TV movie. Network television. Everybody watched this. And I think it was even scarier because it takes place in Lawrence, Kansas. So, like, there were, like, scenery you recognize among just what is the worst nightmare for kids growing up during the Cold War. Nuclear winter, nuclear war, and the devastation that follows. And it's bleak, too, man. There's no happy ending here. This is the obvious play out of War Games with Matthew Broderick, where the computer says the best way to win the game of global thermonuclear war is not to play at all. And this is like what happens if we play. And this movie gave me nightmares, scared the crud out of me, and was for all ages on network television, man. It was an event. And I guarantee there are other people my age that are going to hear this and say, oh, yeah, this movie scared the nerd out of me.
I'm going to speak for the comment section. Did you run away from your mom at the mall after you watched Adam?
Man, of course you did.
Dave.
So there's a story actually where I threw a tantrum at the mall because she wouldn't buy me a toy at KB Toy Store. So I sat down in the middle of this crowded mall, White Lakes Mall in Topeka, and she just walked away. She was just like, okay, sit there. And she walked away. She called my bluff. It worked. I was like, wait, she just left me. I've seen the movies. This is not good.
I'm glad you're here with us, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. Cody, what's your dread award for a scariest disaster movie?
My wife wanted me to say The Stand, the original made-for-TV series.
Okay. It's not my favorite.
But I'm not going with that one.
All right.
Going against
and I
wife.
Almost went with The Happening, but because M. Night is M. Night and you have to predict it, like that whole factor ruins that, oh, this could really happen, that there's a lot of organic things that could just be like, oh, we're going to kill you today for kicks and giggles. But I'm going with a Stephen King book/movie. I'm going Thomas Jane's classic with the best ending maybe in movie history, and I'm going super dark. The Mist.
That was on my short list. Quality choice.
Okay, tell me about The Mist.
So, The Mist is a movie about a powerful storm, but within the powerful storm, a thick fog like comes into the town. But there's something weird with the military base that everyone is like, what's going on with that? But then they all get trapped in a grocery store, and there's like weird animals and prehistoric like bugs and
Marsha Gay Harden.
What's up with that? Disclosure, I've never seen this.
Oh my goodness,
Dave.
Oh, you gotta watch it for the
not
ending
with the
alone.
11-year-old though.
Yeah, not with the 11-year-old. Yeah, this is one you watch by yourself. Yeah, I'm not even going to spoil the ending now.
I'm glad we didn't.
I almost did.
You got to lead off with that, Dave.
All right. Yeah, okay. I guess I'm going to watch this. Is this going to freak me out?
It might.
It'll
so
stay
there's
with
some
you.
Great actors in it. Phenomenal thespians besides Thomas Jane. It's Thomas Jane's best work.
Andre Brower.
Yeah, rest in peace. Ugh,
that'll make me sad.
You will want to have the Kleenexes.
Marsha Gay Harden.
Yeah.
You already said her.
Yep. You'll see why I repeat myself.
Toby Jones. Lori Holden.
It's a good cast.
Jeffrey D. Munn.
Sam Witwer.
Yeah, I forgot about Sam. But no. So, movie's great. And this town is living in chaos, and they don't know if the people that are outside the grocery store are still alive or not. They're inside the grocery store, and then they have to make a choice. Do we go try to seek help outside city limits, or are we going to stick together in here forever? And so, like, with the military base thing, you never know what our government's going to do.
Oh.
Here's the trick. Here's the trick here. This is a little bit of trivia. Directed by Frank Darabont. Not the only time Frank Darabont and Stephen King would join forces, as he also directed The Shawshank Redemption, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Well,
I'm intrigued.
This has a great ending.
Okay. All right.
And it has the Shermanator from American Pie. So what
that's worth to you. I don't even remember who that is.
You will.
You will.
All right. Did we leave any out? What's on your list of the best disaster movies? Tell us in the comments on this post. Also, this is a pop culture draft, which means you, the listener, get to select who won this draft. And why is it me?
I definitely had the most disastrous of disaster picks.
I mean, honestly, I feel we all had a good mix. Nobody went super commercial like the action heroes that I'm still upset about.
Yeah, this is going to come down to like what resonates preference with you. Yeah. What kind of disaster movies resonate with you? So you decide, you vote. We'll have those up on Saturday, the graphics for you to vote on that. And yeah, have fun with it. Tell us why you're voting for which person you're voting for, where you disagreed with us here, and make sure and subscribe to the pod if you haven't already. Like the post on YouTube if you didn't already, if you're listening to it on YouTube, that helps the algorithm, and review us as well. That also helps.
Leave a comment in the comment section, please. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.